wanna be the best in the game. Invest in my name. Check no restraints. I'm obsessed with the pain. I ingest, I retain. Assess and I change. Possessed by the thought I'll be free one day from society's restraints. Money, clout, and fame. A disease, a plague. We all love to hate. Have to play the game. Have to make a name. All our insecurities are on display.
This is war with the enemy. Think that it was.
This is another episode of Tactical Awareness. It is season 2, episode 15, the Colder Than Carbonite recap. My name is Ash, and I'm joined by my friends Owen and Dan to recount the adventure of me getting on a plane ahead to participate in Canada's national championship, Colder Than Carbonite, the Infinity ITS satellite event. Now, this was a 2-day, 5-game event, and what we're going to do is go round robin and tell you our experiences. So, everyone's doing and get this underway.
That's a good song. I actually really, I'll be honest, I really like that movie.
But you have to like go all through the mailbag.
Yeah, we'll do the mailbag. Yeah, we'll do the mailbag, and then we'll talk about our games. Talk about the Colder Than Carbonite. What this has all been leading up to. The last like 12, 15 episodes. I think we're on episode 15 right now. And yeah, we'll take some questions from the mailbag, and we'll talk about how it went, how the Carbonites were cooled, how the performances were had, how everybody did their things. We've only got one question anyway.
Oh, there's only one in there?
Yeah, so we're all good.
Oh, there we go.
And obviously, we don't really need to talk too much about our individual things that we did this past week for Infinity because we went to Colder Than Carbonite together. I flew it to Alberta. You guys picked me up at the airport. We drove from Calgary to Edmonton in a nice drive. And then we drove back in a not so nice drive watching the F-150 graveyards fill up.
Mm-hmm.
It was fun. And I didn't realize that the pickup truck was the natural predator of Alberta, but apparently it is.
It happens a lot.
Jay explained that that there's not a lot of salting done because normally it's like minus 20 or minus 30 and the salt just doesn't work. So I'm not surprised that you got that sheet ice that we got on the Sunday coming back anymore.
That's why they got rocks and then everyone's got cracked windshields.
Yeah, it's all grit. They don't do sand, they just do grit. They don't do salt, they just do grit.
I think past minus 10, the salt doesn't do much.
Yeah, it's anywhere between minus 15 and minus 20. The salt just like is ineffective. The liquid stuff is a bit better, but like just like granular salt doesn't really work anymore. And so, you know, it's supposed to be like minus 25 in Alberta right now. It was plus 11 when I got there. And then flash froze down to like minus 10 when we were coming back. It was decidedly global warming-y.
Back to normal.
Back to normal. It's going to be so fucking dry there next summer. You guys are just going to be swimming in forest fires. It's going to be insane.
It'd be like that.
It do.
I don't care.
It'd be how it do. You live in a concrete wasteland, so you'd be fine. I imagine it'll be fine. There's nothing to burn. It's all just concrete buildings.
All those abandoned homes.
All those abandoned homes. I guess they could burn down, yeah.
Or shopping malls.
Edmonton, the new Windsor of the West. So let's jump in and take our one question for the mailbag. It's from Raffin. Raffin, it's everybody, anybody, please, is who it's addressed to. And it's, what is Canada's story in the lore of Infinity? Where were they instrumental in the first off-planet Tim Hortons, polar bear pods, combat toques? He spelled toques as tooks, which is very funny. Seriously, though, is there any lore about Canada? I don't think we even get a mention, as far as I know. I think we're just rolled into U.S. Ariadna.
Yep.
They just assume that, like, we put an arm on the Ariadne spaceship. And then somewhere there's, like, a can Ariadne force. I mean, by the time that the jump gates get built in Human History and Infinity, I assume we've just been annexed for our water rights into the United States, right? Like that just makes sense. They've used up all their fresh water, so they've just annexed the whole country.
Collapsed like, into tribalism.
Yeah, it's like Fallout. Just like Fallout. They just annexed the entire country. So yeah, that's what I assume happens. We're just part of U.S. Ariadna. We get taken off planet, and then our economies all collapse, and Pan Oceania takes over and Yu Qing basically split the rest of the country for the planet. It turns into the Expanse. But there's, as to my knowledge, there's nothing official. There's Spud's unofficial neo-Canadian Capital Lane Army and the Indignant Honkbirds, which was the regiment, I believe, that he created, which is a beautifully painted neo-Terran army with his HVT Justin Trudeau. And he sculpted himself. I think you can see pictures of it on his website, which is pretty great. But that's about as close as we come to having Canadian content in Infinity. I'm still waiting for Carlos and the writers, Gutierrez or whatever, to write it in for me. Like, get on it, guys. Come on. We're standing hard for Infinity. Give us some love in the background. Give us one named character.
We've seen a couple of sectorials have the opportunity for double Harris teams, but so far none have had double core option. Do you think this would be too mechanically powerful to include, and why? There are actually more questions at the bottom.
Oh, are there? Oh, there's a big skip. Oh, yeah, you're right. Oh, weird. They just put them down in new pages and left things empty. That is weird. Do we think double core would be a thing? I mean, it effectively is in like a minor way in Steel Phalanx, right?
Yeah, but you don't get the plus three.
You don't get the huge mechanical advantage. You don't get the minor mechanical advantage.
Well, you miss out on the broken plus one BS and then the like pure plus three BS.
Mm-hmm. You don't miss out on the broken plus one BS, do you? Yeah, you're saying when you don't have a full core team. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
I think it would be fine, but they'd have to be very specific in what counts as a core, or maybe eliminate Harris's and have more duos kind of thing. But then that's not fun to do because you're very limited, so I don't know.
Yeah, or make it that all the cores are like, there's nothing that has like the same keyword. You know what I mean? Like, you're never getting a pure. Like, it's all not mixed.
Possible unless you bring five of the same guy.
Well, they can just mix the AVAs inside the fire teams. You know what I mean? Like, all the AVAs have like a X to X number in them. So you just do it all star to like one or two, and then you never get the actual bonus.
Spiral Core does get this
with Tricore.
Because Tricore counts as a core, but is a Harris.
Mm-hmm.
So you can do two cores in Spiral. Shows how much relevance that has made to that faction. But I mean, welcome to, you can't buy our models and we're a subsection of models. So yeah. Like, I guess you could do a like Brawlers thing now.
I think that's as close as they them. Get. Yeah. Because you can buy Brawlers. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, it hasn't broken the game. I guess if that's the question, it wouldn't have any kind of in the game. Not really. Like,
if some faction got two cores, it just means that 10 of their models would all be close together.
Exactly. Would all be sitting on top of each other. Not super maneuverable. Like the
same multiple weaknesses of current cores. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And to make them powerful, it costs points. So then you're just stripping out the remaining orders in your order pool, right? Having two cores means usually having to sacrifice a little bit of something to make them happen. So I would agree. Do we have any other new ones? I don't think I see any.
I think there's one just reiterating what we talked about last time with the... Oh, no, it was the just last Happy Halloween one.
Oh, yeah. I was browsing your old videos and came across one called Infinity N3 Report Happy Halloween. We played a custom co-op zombie scenario that was really cool. What are your thoughts on doing another custom mission for N4? We could definitely do that. You wrote that mission, actually, the zombie mission, which was a lot of fun. And I think that's great. I've been toying around with doing custom missions for Infinity for a while. And if something I'm thinking about doing for the GMG Patreon is doing some solo co-op missions where you like form strike teams and there's like a defended location and it's like heists. Or it's, you know, like HVT grabs and stuff like that. Like, you're trying to get in and get out. It's my, like,
I think Infinity
desire for, like, a light RPG.
Definitely go for some asymmetrical game.
100%. Yeah. 100%.
Like, we've talked about this a million times, about how, like, you could literally just go into XCOM and just take every scenario type out of XCOM.
And burn
them into Infinity missions and go, look, this is a whole new series of missions. This one is you have to break in and hack this computer. There's an attacker and defender. This one is to kidnap their HVT. There's an attacker and defender.
And the ARO system makes it so easy to do AI opponents, right? Like, they already exist. Like, turrets are AI opponents. Like, the whole AI the game is already, like, pre-built. Like, it wouldn't take a lot. You're just really writing scenarios that are fun and different. And it's just giving some, like, force composition stuff. Like, I think it'd be fun to do, like, a co-op mission where both you and your teammate basically get to pick, like, you know, a sort of curated 150 points, and then you take on 300 points worth of, like, AI, or maybe even more than that, like 350 worth of, like, AI NPCs that are following some kind of program, like, around the map, and you try and get in and get out. I think that'd be awesome.
Yep. Or even just, like, you only have one model, and you just do TAC aware lieutenant order to three orders, and then you each have one, and you have to kind of infiltrate a complex, and you have to do like cautious moves and not alert turrets, and like you have to do takedowns and things like that, mm-hmm. where it alert other guys nearby, because like the alert skill exists and like the lookouts and stuff like that.
So you just have them automatically do that if they, you know, are reacting.
If the requirements are met, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That sounds super easy. I feel like it'll be very map dependent.
Yeah, the board's going to matter.
That's the thing is, Dan, these wouldn't be like ITS scenarios. These would be like, you'd need to have a terrain collection and a model collection for the opponent force. Like they're more like RPG modules, if that makes sense, that you're designing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I definitely think there's a world for them. I think they could be super fun. So I'm going to take a stab at writing some.
That's it for questions, though.
I think that is it for questions. Yeah, I think you're right. So let's talk about some carbonite. Unfortunately, the audio for the car ride up, because we had snow tires in, is kind of dog shit. So instead of recapping and doing that audio, what I might do is try and clean it up. But it's not good enough to put out for everybody. So what I might do is clean it up and then put it up on the Patreon for the patrons to listen to, so they can just hear us like talk stupid dog like shit to each other. But I, you know, the write up, we basically noodled on lists. You finally submitted your army list when we got to the hotel, which was great. And we were all locked in. And then it was day one. We showed up at the venue, and our first mission was Mind Wipe. And I think we all felt pretty good about this one. It was the one that was the day one when we didn't kind of like spend a lot of time sweating, because we all had tools for it. Who wants to go first and talk about their first round game?
So, Dan, how did the ninja go?
So, remember last episode when we all bullied Dan into taking a ninja? How was the ninja the whole event, actually? Don't even start round one. How did you like him?
The ninja only existed for two games.
Okay.
Those were the two games where I decidedly won the game. Everything else. So it turns out, I think the list was just great, but the ninja definitely for Mind Wipe. Because of some lucky dice, I don't think I needed him, but it sure made things a whole lot easier. Basically, Mind Wipe is a hell in a handbasket for ISS, because you only have a few models that can do anything about it.
You get a couple D charges, you get a crane with a DA.
Are there D charges?
Your mech engineer has D charges.
You can't take a mech engineer.
Or your sofa tech does then.
Who wants to take a sofa tech?
I'm just saying there are models with D charges.
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, there's no models that can do anything.
Yeah. There's no models you'd like that can do anything. Got it.
It's not worth the sacrifice. And so the ninja in there, as I played against JSA, against a local Calgary guy, John, who's a very solid player. Usually when I win against him, it's because I crit him off the board and he gets all salty about it. But I played a very solid game. I was able to go first. I was able to go up and just kind of grab some board control. The Quang Chi core just kind of went up and did some suiciding and just kind of got up in his grill, killed one of his, he killed his Uber hacker. And just made things difficult for him, so that on his turn he couldn't do a whole lot. One thing I got very lucky about was he grabbed Saito Togen out of hidden deployment, ran up and was like, "Hey, you have an Uber hacker crane agent. Let me go stab him in the back." And I'm like, he's like, "I'm CC24 with martial arts level 4." And I'm like, "I'm CC24 with martial arts level 3." And he's like, "Oh.
Uh-oh, we're both the same. Oh, no.
Oh, no. And so it was, he had a +3 for surprise attack.
Yes.
He rolled a 6. I rolled a 9. We bounced. So, woof. Then he's like, then he just hum and hawed and went off whatever, did some other orders. And finally, like, nah, I gotta try this. So he spent another order. He rolled like a 4 and I rolled a 5. And he was like, "Well, I beat you." I was like, no, we're even now. And we're, uh-oh. And then the DA exploded Saito. And so, as a big fan of the concept of Saito, I was sad to see him explode, but also very happy to see a crane agent actually do something in melee, which never happens. And that just kept me on the right path. I had a really weird second turn where I had to spend seven orders to kill one of his guys with an explosive close combat weapon, just like point blank shotgunning him around the corner with my CSU with a light shotgun, and just he
Which is
just
pretty
F off.
funny. 12
And
point guy
because he was
trying to
just
kill this
dodging,
thing.
right? Because the moment he doesn't dodge, I trade my life with my CSU and just hit three templates because he was in a Harris. But so he just dodge, and somehow he survived seven orders of
So
me.
you can't possibly die, but he can't. He just needs to keep making his dodge. Got it.
Right. And so I was like, but so that was frustrating, but it was kind of like the dice were kind of evened out at that point. So that was okay. And then last turn, I had plenty of orders and I was just able to, I had just had to get through one random discover roll that he needed on like a four or something with the min minus six ninja just running up the board. Got him a handsome terrain, was able to beat the console down, wire over, and then hit another console as well. And then he just didn't have enough, anything close enough
Yes, ran out
to
of
get any of
gas.
my consoles.
Right.
So it turned out pretty good. It was a good game. And John, kudos to him, because he's usually salty when I crit him off the board, was admitted that it was a good game back and forth. I ended up winning 10-1.
That's amazing. What about you, Owen?
My first game was against Military Orders on Mindwipe, which was unfortunate for them because I know Military Orders pretty well.
You sure do.
And I had every tool I needed because I think my Joan list of all of the dudes is like really good. I do lose with that list in this event, and that's the only loss that I get. But in this first game, it was just like completely dismantled, and the game was overturned too. The funniest point was I deployed first, went first, and Joan just stood out in the middle of the open, no cover, just standing there because I'm like, I'm going to coordinate. And then they deployed nine models and then one guy in group two, and I'm like, oh, so you have a Trinitarian. And they're like, oh, maybe not. Oh, okay, yeah, anyway, so Mr. Snifferbot was just like, there he is. And there's a
There's the
Trinitarian sniper
guy.
looking right at Joan. And that Trinitarian sniper died horribly because Joan just coordinated herself and all of her friends and took a free sniper to the chest, or opposed, it was shot back with Joan. But yeah, and then it
It's
just.
so mean.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
This poor guy's like, I got this cool hidden deploy model, and I got him great. And you're like, I know your faction in and out. I know you have a hidden deploy model. This is where you'd put him. Censor.
It wasn't even, I know where it's going to be. It's like, I got five orders and I move 6 inches, and then everything around me within eight gets popped. And
There's a
it, and
16-inch circle that
do
turns
you
it up to
remember,
the 18-inch
Dan,
circle.
when I was talking about how as soon as you do the first sensor, you know where the hidden guy is?
Did you have to do multiple sensors?
I had to do it twice. The
Oh, there
first
you go.
one, I walked up and I went, I'm going to do a sensor. Is anyone within zone? And then it was like, oh, let me measure exactly where that is. And it's like, oh, perfect. There is a guy there. And then I moved a little bit more and then got them. But yeah, it's the your opponent doesn't think to have you turn around sort of thing, where they just measure where the eight is towards where their person is, but they're outside of eight, so they're not revealed. And you're like, okay, I spend another order. Do I see you now? I do. Okay, perfect. And then you die. Yeah. Other than that, it was like a whole hodgepodge of different models came together to just, they had a five-man link of double Father Knight, Kyle, and double Hospitaller. And it's a lot of like mechanical power, but Digger's real good. Snifferbot got his repeater onto the whole group of them. And then Garda and Montessa came from the other side and just overpowered them. And then through the isolating, hacking, shooting, and CC, just killed them all. And that's it.
Sweet, sweet.
It was over turn two. They didn't have any models left, and that was that.
Since I get a good result. My game one was against Brennan, who goes by Listen in ITS, and he was playing Steel Phalanx. It was a pretty standard Steel Phalanx list. He had a Hidden Agemma, had a core with Eudoros, Pandy, what was the other hitting piece? Hippolyta to get around with like all the smoke grenades, and I think a Myrmidon. And then a Harris with a Myrmidon, Phoenix, and Makan, who was probably Lieutenant, just like land up top. And then some remotes for Spice. He had like a missile bot and a couple of flash bots. I was playing my assassins, and I took my list one, which is my day one list. I played it all day on day one, and yeah, it was real good. The basic, I think, like winning tactic, steel flanks versus assassins, is I just didn't do anything. He got first turn, I got deployment. I chose deployment, gave him the side that I didn't want. He chose first turn and then proceeded to spend almost his entire order pool terrified of the four MIM zero cam markers that were across the middle of the board, and like spending an inordinate amount of orders blowing up zero viz eclipse grenades to like get around. So he went and pushed the console around one, unveiling where the AI was going to be, the rogue AI, and then just retreated back to his base and like hit out there because he didn't want to be in the middle of McMurrow, double Azuera Harris, and a bunch of maybe Sunduk Butt camo markers. And I think that just played to my advantage. He just kept being like, are you going to ARO? And I'm like, nope, I'm fine. I'm just going to stand here. And then he would throw another smoke grenade as opposed to trying to discover me. So I started turn one with nothing except for a pushed console. I went up and pushed the console for the other side so I could unlock where the main target was, and then ran forward with McMurrow. He managed to down McMurrow after like a couple of engagements, but I killed a few models. And then it went to round two. He was in the middle of me now, so Sonic Bus showed up, blew a few people away, and then top of two for me, like, and then again blew most of his orders just getting places with grenades, but didn't actually get to any of my my servers. And then I walked over with Dr. Shotgun. He shot a bunch of cocaine into McMurrow, who'd gone down in turn one, who got up and proceeded to kill two consoles. I spent my order pool killing two consoles and staying where I was. I couldn't kill the one with the rogue AI on it. That ended up happening on turn three, through a combination of McMurrow, one of my Fides, and the Asawira Doctor. But by then, he was just oscillating back and forth, left and right, between with what was left of his link team. My Asawira Spitfire killed Phoenix, and he was terrified of the Fides on either side of the board that were just lurking, not doing anything, but very much within like two orders of killing McCon kind of at will. And he just kept trying to like move back and forth to guard them. So I just had him pinned down all game, and ended up winning it, 10-2. But like, it was actually pretty close, like VP wise, cause I wasn't aggressively trying to kill his guys. I was just focusing the mission and killing the boxes instead. So I think, we're only like maybe 20 VPs apart when it was all said and done. It wasn't a very bloody game. It was more like a maneuvering game, and he was super nice and a really pretty army. And that was my game one. Maybe we'll Ouroboros this. I'll do my game two, and then you guys can go and do your game two. So we'll just keep flowing. So my game two was actually against Matt McCarbonite. He is one of the organizers. He got to play this year while Randolph, I think, was doing all of the running and TOing this time around. And he's playing his JSA. We were playing on his beautifully painted Warsenal table as well, which was really nice, but it was very civvy. One of the things I think all three of us noticed is that the Edmonton meta, they have a lot of like true line of sight buildings. They do a lot of shoot through windows. And a lot of their buildings are like 3D printed or like older Warsenal buildings where like they're just leaky. There's not a lot of solid walls. So you can see across lots of angles you can't normally see across. Did you guys have that experience? That was definitely my experience, at least in two of my games.
I agree not to do true line of sight on a lot of the maps.
Yeah.
Because I found most of my games were on more of the like built up tables, like the table we played at the end.
Yeah.
The only exception, that being my game three, where there was no terrain on the board. I couldn't deploy more than six models outside of a terrain. Like only six models could be deployed out of line of fire at the start of the game. Because it was like five cubes and two highways. Mm-hmm. That was it.
Yeah.
And it was the same table that you played on your final round, Dan, only it didn't have the room to block the middle. It was just exactly the same, but just a giant open space in the middle.
Just a huge field.
That seems awful.
Yeah. And then, yeah. So I mean, yeah, it's just different. Like it's I don't necessarily, yeah, like it doesn't really bother me shooting through the buildings. It's more of a like, if you're not used to playing like this, where people are going to be killing each other all the time, then it's definitely very different and it's hard, mm-hmm, to close the gap. And like your army plays to some degree for that need to close the gap.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm in the same boat. half my army is just chain rifles, so
yeah,
I get it.
Yeah, well, it wasn't bad for me. JSA ran into it, and Sonic Butt and Daylamis and Spitfires and stuff tended to just chew them up. So I got really lucky with killing his Rishi on turn one with Sonic Butt and with some long bombs from my Spitfire. I also killed like several other key pieces that he needed to complete the mission. We were playing, actually, game two was B-Pong, by the way. And I mean, it was really hard for him to get and hold the points. I think I won the roll on that one and got second. So I was able to end the round, right, and score the points where I wanted them to be. And generally speaking, although he had a really good push with Yojimbo and both Ryukin 09 were almost impervious to all my guns. Like both of his Ryukins, no matter what, I just kept laying shotgun templates on them, and they just kept not dying. I had to eventually send a Fide halfway across the board to go kill the killer hacker one that was holding one of the two consoles, so that he didn't score a point. But then I took the middle. I asked we were a Dr. Shotgun again, being a hero, along with the Muyib heavy rocket launcher, who was blasting things all day. My Spitfire died to immediate crits in the first turn, so it was just Dr. Shotgun saving the day. And managed to do so with bringing McMurrow back a couple of times to help him. So it went well. I ended up winning that one, I believe 8-0. And he just couldn't dig it back away from me once I was sort of locked in with all my short range gunfighters. The Sonic Butt like killed quite a bit until he went down. And JSA just didn't have, even with, I think he had Oda, he got in a shotgun fight, unfortunately, at close range with his Karakuri, and the Karakuri Mark 12 could not handle that in the open. And then he also had Nico. So Nico, Oda, and the Karakuri were trying to take back the middle, and they just kind of ground themselves to pieces against McMurrow and the Asawira. So really good game, beautiful army, beautiful table. It was a real pleasure to play him. And he was a super nice guy. Obviously, as one of the organizers, he was having a great time because he was getting to play games. It's so nice when you're when you're a TO and you get to actually play. So I really enjoyed the game and hope I get to play them again. All right, what about you guys? What was your B-Pong experience?
You're up, Owen.
I played against Bakunin. It wasn't really much of a game. First turn, I moved up. I did two wounds to one of his tags and knocked down the remote that was part of his link. And then on his turn, he lost his tag, his Pywell, his remote, and then half of his models, just making errors. Like he's got a smoke grenade down, and then he moves up his tag into the smoke, but we can see him as he walks into it, so I place a template so that it hits Pywell and the tag, and so he loses Pywell for nothing. Or he spends an order fixing his remote, spends a command token to put it in the link, and then moves a different guy as link lead, and then I just shoot the remote again and it dies. Yeah. And yeah. Like things like that, where it's just these, like, you know, these aren't the right things, but you're just kind of caught up in it at the time.
And you're in a tournament too, so like you're going to capitalize on it, even though you kind of feel greasy about it after doing it.
Yeah, because it's like, well, and the, like, you declare all the things too. Like, I specifically call it when I couldn't kill him that, like, hey, this guy is suppressing facing right where your remote is. And then, or like, this guy's going to dodge around the corner so that he can see your tag, and like things of that nature. But then it's just like, it all worked to some degree.
Mm-hmm. You probably should have tilt too.
Yeah. And then the thing that finally sealed the deal for him at the bottom of one was, after losing so much stuff, he decides to just blitz it. He has a double stigmata list too, which is neat. And I think it's actually pretty good for B-Pong. He blitzes his one stigmata forward. He goes through that smoke grenade. In doing so, Pywell dies. It takes a wound. And then he rolls a 20 to try and click the button.
Oh.
And fails. And the stigmata dies. Pywell dies. The remote nearby dies. The other stigmata goes to one wound. And he's like, I don't want to play anymore. I'm like, it's fair enough. And so that was it. I played one turn of that game. I don't have much to say because there weren't any lessons learned.
It only lasted a turn. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
What about you, Dan? How was your B-Pong? Because this is one of the missions on day one. We were all like, it's going to come down to who wins the initiative roll, how well this is, how easy or hard this is going to be.
So yeah. I played my Sun Tzu list. I won the roll and I chose him to deploy first. This is against Matt, who is recently moved to Calgary, but he's like a He's a local pretty. He's a good player. He's also he played Yujing. I played ISS. He constantly tells me that ISS is no good, and that's for the love of God, don't play Sun Tzu. At least play the sniper version because he's so bad. And I was like, perfect. Let's see who wins.
time to test our mettle.
Yeah. So we had practiced actually this game beforehand, like a couple weeks before. He had changed his list pretty dramatically. He had brought one of the new guys, the killer hacker that also has spotlight. And he performed pretty well. So he chose first. He came in. I left my Dakini sniper up, but basically a Sien smoke bomb shot him off the board. There was not much I could do. And I always debate leaving him up or not. And that case, I should have left him down. I just like prone on a rooftop kind of thing. So then he activated a blue wolf on the other side. And that was the first time seeing a blue wolf on the table. So that was fun. But basically, he went up, exchanged some shots with Sforza, got him down to Dogged, and then got past him, and then didn't have to fight him anymore. I did hit him with a mad... No, he dodged a mad trap, and then he killed a lot of guys, but then basically ended up engaged with my Sujan. So my Sujan was kind of shut down, right. And I didn't want to fight him with my Sujan. Because he'd have better dice. So I was like, okay. So he's just a dead model hanging out over there. And then, who is it? Liang Tai runs up the middle of the catwalks, just like, and I have one Dakini paramedic doing pot shots at him. And he just like ignores me.
Oh, no.
He's got no wounding cap.
Yeah.
And then I just keep missing. And I'm like, God dang it. Come on.
I need a template.
It's pretty much the Uruk-hai running towards Helm's Deep Wall and just with like, bomb. No one can stop him. And then they're like, oh no, it's too late. And just then he jumped down.
Yeah.
And basically blew up my Quang Chi list.
Oh no.
My Quang Chi like core. So I was like, oh no. So I'm like, okay, so I'm down a lot of orders already. And Sun Tzu's alive, my chain of command is dead, but I'm like, I don't have a ton of orders. What can I do? So I find this perfect little building to drop my my Garuda in. And I find out, because he uses a lieutenant order on the CN, that I was a lieutenant. And he was in the wide open, and I got a back arc on him. He was in, like, some greenery stuff, so it was -3 to hit, and or it was, like, low viz and -1 burst. But I still got a free shot of 3 shots with a Spitfire, with no one else being able to see him.
And you're like your basic BS too. Yeah.
So I shoot him. He only loses one wound.
That's the worst.
And I'm like, come on. And so I pop out again. And I'm like, okay, well, this is still good dice. It's just one worse than him. There is a camel marker, which I correctly guessed was a beast hunter. And the beast hunter shot a Panzerfaust at me. I won the face... the face roll, I think he made 3 saves on the Sien without going down, which was really unfortunate. And then the Beast Hunter crit. No, it was just 2 saves because I hit him twice. And then I beat the Beast Hunter, but the Beast Hunter crit on a 5. And so right. The Garuda blew up. And so I was a little bit disappointed in that. But at least everyone that was watching the middle had been kind of moved back. And so then that Dakini paramedic just ran up the board real quick. Killed one or two of his warbands, pushed a little button, and then stood on it. And so then, because he didn't do any of the scenario at all first turn, he was just trying to kill me. And so I was up 2-0. Nice. And he took his turn again, killed some more of my stuff, and went and took the middle and scored 3 points. And then I was like, okay, what can I do?
It's all coming down to the end now. Yeah.
And so, like, basically, Sun Tzu runs up. And blows up the middle, just kind of like a monster, like an awesome person, just like boom boom, almost kills one of the guys holding the left box, which was too unfortunate, because if that guy would have died, he just made a really good armor roll, but it is what it is. Then it set me up to win, but then I was like, I was at least able to hold the middle box. So then how did this? No, I guess no, he didn't score anything at all because he only scored at the end. Anyways, at the end of that turn, I scored one and he scored two. So it was tied 3-3. And then I basically had like five orders left. And it was basically all Sun Tzu. And he had like five guys around me on the middle button from like dodging in at different things. And I'm like, okay, Sun Tzu, you got to do a lot of work here. And so the plan was I had to get on the enemy side of the table and stomp my feet for a point. And then if I got really lucky, I'd be able to clear off. I had an impetuous Quangxi on the left side that was able to get up and could have walked up and put a template on the one guy over there, which maybe turns out, maybe not, who knows. So I walk up, I kill a bunch of people, I stamp my feet. He's looking at me with his Xian. Oh yeah, he tried to murder Sun Tzu with the Xian, and Sun Tzu just started like popping off whip 17
flash pulses. That's no joke.
And I kept rolling like a 16 or a 15 or something.
Just high.
And then because the Xian is like BTS 6 and in cover, and so he needed like a 3 or a 4 or something to like save it, even though it's like, but eventually he did not hurt Sun Tzu at all, and he failed his BTS, and so he got stunned. And so I was like, yes, Sun Tzu's alive and doing well. And so it all came down to the last order. He dodged into melee with me, and then it came down to last two orders. I dodged. He tried to CC me. He had the higher roll. I got lucky. I was able to dodge him behind him, and then I walked over to touch the middle button and shoot him in the back. I hit him both times. He failed both his armor saves. And then we tied 5-5. Or is it 6-6? I think it was 5-5. We tied 5-5. And it was like, oh my goodness, what a game.
That's amazing.
It was a lot of fun. I think from the what I could have done differently was deploy my Quangxi a little bit more effectively, so I wouldn't have lost so many orders on Lian Kai's suicide run. So that was a lesson to be learned, but otherwise I think I played pretty well, and it was some bad dice put me into a more difficult situation, but I had some good dice as well, surviving more than I should have against the Blue Wolf for a while. So I think dice were pretty even. It was just a really fun game.
That's awesome. It does kind of teach a lesson that the Quangxi core, though, it generates so many orders, but it is kind of squishy. If the right thing gets in the mix of them, you're like, your order pool can get like rapidly depleted if you lose them.
Yeah. And I tried to dodge with all of them too, and I just didn't make any dodges.
Oh, that sucks. He just templated the whole team, eh?
Yeah. Well, he got 3 of them out of the 4. And then the other people that were looking all shot him to death and he blew up. So.
Yeah. A life for a life. A life for 3 enough. Lives. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He tripled his value in orders.
Yeah. Great.
Sweet. All right. Well, what about you?
I was going to say my third game.
No, I'm tails my off third of- game.
Your conversation about dice, though, really talks to my third game. Because my third game is the one game that I lost against the guy who ended up winning the event.
Yes, and you played Mjolnir, who is the one of the, I think, top people in the world right now.
Yeah.
As far as his overall score, he is ranked, let me just set, he's number 3 in the US, number 7 in the world.
He beat me. Yeah, kind of. I mean, the worst part about it, and the thing that frustrated me so much, is that, like, I was excited for the game because it's like, all right, I'm going to play somebody who's, like, right at the top, somebody who definitely knows what they're doing. They've got all the right models. They're gonna know to make the right plays, and they're not going to get caught up in, like, the silly, like, mistakes being made. And then my entire game, the dice just absolutely abandoned me. And, like, I hate to say that it's dice, and, like, we've talked on this podcast about how much dice isn't the deciding factor. But I have played this back in my head again and again and again, and there isn't, like, I don't believe there is actually something else I could have done, because the reality of playing, we're playing supplies, and I couldn't open a supply box.
Yeah, you failed every single roll.
I failed every attempt to open a supply box. I failed every attempt to smoke. I could not beat him in face-to-face rolls, and I couldn't make armor saves. It was just every model in every instance. I lost every fight. The only one I think I won was an HMG against a Cataran on the active turn, where my HMG tried to kill his Cataran. I think that's the only model that I killed that game. Just couldn't do anything. And Like, obviously, he's not going to let that go. Like, you take advantage, no, you push forward, you take your stuff. Like, he played it all right. Like, he had his guys in the right spots. The plays that I had to try and counter it, like, just nothing worked. Like, I'm like, if any individual piece had started to work, it would have been a game. Like, do I think I would have won? Who knows? But at least it would have been like a back and forth instead of this like turn over turn of me just losing everything. Mm-hmm. I lose in the active turn and I lose in the reactive turn. And at the end of it, it's like, all right, well, by the end of his turn three, him having gone first, I had zero models remaining. I had lost every single guy. He was playing Starco. He had his Nauf link and his Riot Girl link.
Yeah, it's Nauf Ugly Seals with a digger and a Dactari Doctor. And then he had Uahu in a moderate or a Riot Girl link with a Spitfire and a shotgun.
And we were playing on a board that was just a wide open field. And so Nauf could sit at the back of his deployment in cover and shoot all three of the supply tokens. There wasn't actually a way to get to any of them from my deployment zone. So I had to fight him or get my smoke, and I couldn't. And I, when I say smoke, it's Eclipse smoke, and I failed that a bunch. And then when I finally got it and got my chance to fight him, it was face to face with two shotgun shots and a bunch of Spitfire shots at him being at his good range, and I just lost every dice roll and he killed me. And that was just how the whole game went. And the dice never turned. Like, each turn, I'm like, all right. If this works, like, it's not over yet. And just nothing.
He even said that to you too. Like, he was a real gentleman, but he was like, yeah, I see. Like, it's because you played it out to the end. Like, you played to the end. A lot of people would have walked away. And he was like, good on you for, you know, like, playing through
to the very end. Yeah. Because I'm like, even if on my final turn, the Croc Man at least made one of the two attempts he had at opening a box, at least I would have had a box and he would have had to come and take it from Joan. And even that failed. Like,
that's really frustrating.
He has an immobilized Riot Girl who I get because I coordinate shots into her with Jones' coordinated order, and she just beats my HMG and ARO and doesn't die and goes
with one die
with one die at negative six. And I'm like, okay, like, that was the whole day, and it was just so disappointing. Like,
not because you lost, but more because it wasn't a game.
Yeah, like, if I had lost because, like, he had outflanked me with this and with that, and like not to say that he didn't do that, like, you should do all those things, but it was just like, if I had had my turn to kind of push back, but like, it never happened. I just lost everywhere all the time. And it's like, all right, well, that's the game then, I guess. And it happened really fast because it's easy if all your models just die all the time. Like, your turn goes fast. Quick.
Yeah.
Owen was very salty, understandably just salty. Like, I'm still playing my game. He goes over and he's like, let me tell you all about my game.
He was not typical Owen after a game when either of us saw him. Yeah.
Yeah. I like I said, I don't mind losing. That was a bitter lose because it's like,
well, I watched your brain cycle through the game tape. Like, when you walked over to me and Dan after that game, I could see the entire game replaying in your head and you trying to figure out like what you did wrong and being so mad that the only answer you came back with was, I just needed to win any of, like, even just half my fights. Even if I just won half my
even
fights.
Even none of my fights, just any of the action.
Pick up the buttons.
If I had successfully dodged it all, or if I had successfully got him with the free shots with the coordinates, or if I had opened the box.
Or the smoke.
Like, or if the smoke had succeeded. Like, even things that weren't opposed, if I had just win those, then I'd have a chance. Like, I tried to active turn dodge around the corner so I could pick up a box, and I couldn't even do that. Like, it was literally everything failed. Even there was an instance where one of his guys comes in from the side and walks up on the bot and my digger, and he lays a template down, and I shoot him back and I miss. Like, oh, I guess I'll just die then. There's nothing I can do. And then he makes his armor saves against the digger, and the digger and the bot both instantly die. And it's like, okay, I guess just nothing. Yeah, well, it was pretty bitter, but whatever. Let it be like that.
It happens sometimes. Yeah. And if you're going to lose, you better lose big. If you're going to win big all the time, you might as well lose big too.
Yeah, lose all the way to the very end.
Lose every single ball.
I think it was survivors.
You got a point though. You did get a point. You got him 10-1, and it was, I think, like 200 and something and like
zero.
You had nothing left.
No, every single model died. I went right to the bottom.
Yeah. Well, my third game was against Znork. I can't remember. I didn't type in his in my notes. I kept notes of all my scores because I'm just always paranoid because I've been a TO about that stuff. So I did not get his name, his actual name, though, in my notes. And he was playing Combined Army, Vanilla Combined. Beautifully painted yet again. I was really lucky. All my opponents were wonderful painters. And we played on a 3D printed table that once again had lots of weird little lines of sight and concavey bits in them. And we're playing supplies as it was round three. So he had an Avatar. He had all the greatest hits, like Avatar, Speculo Killer, Taigas, M drones, whatever the drone is that's the little one order Ecadrons, Flashbots, and then he had Bit and Kiss for like his hacker attack. And he went first and lined up defensively, holding back. I'm more than happy to have him come wade through my camo markers and open all the supply boxes for me. I'll just come take them back if I need to, because I don't have anything that's going to fight an Avatar at long range, right? Even my Asawirs are like, no, thank you. I want absolutely nothing to do with this. We're all hiding as best we can. Deployment was fun though, because I chose deployment because there was a better and worse half, and I knew that I needed to like deploy conservatively to survive an Avatar. And that means his reserve models went down before mine. So he had the Avatar in reserve and his Speculo Killer in reserve, and he dumped his Speculo in the middle of my table, or in the middle of my back corner, just outside my deployment zone, next to like my fire team and my war core. So this was next to my, like, the one thing that looked like it was going to be a threat to his Avatar, which was my AP Spitfire Asawir, right? He might be able to active turn, win a fight. So sticks a Speculo next to him, but I had two Fidés. So my first Fidé was in the back line, kind of just giving him fits. My other Fidé just stood because he decided to deploy his Speculo Killer inside a building in a 90 degree corner. So my Fidé just stood directly 1 millimeter in front of him so that he couldn't move out of the corner without revealing himself.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. I just bullied him into a corner. And I as soon as I did it, I watched his face be like, but I can squeeze through there. And I was like, I'm not terrain. You can't squeeze if you're not squeezing through terrain. You gotta do something to me first. And he's like, oh shit. And he immediately kind of realized his mistake. So first turn, I kind of effectively neutralized this Speculo Killer from killing my fire team. And he decides he's going to go after him with the Avatar. So I strip his order pool. He comes after me with the Avatar. He goes to like my poor brave war core, who I'd forgotten in the first game and just barely remembered my second game, is standing there facing down the Avatar. And he's like, all right, I'm going to shoot your war core. And I was like, cool, I'm going to flash pulse you. And he's like, what do you need to roll? And I was like, I'm minus 12. Like, no matter what happens here, I'm like, you're like 31 inches away from me across the board. You got, you know, min minus six and cover. I'm going to crit you on ones. And he's like, okay. And I just rolled a one. And he's like, what? and then he had a BTS of like 9 or whatever, 12 or whatever it is. And he rolls a one for his BTS save. So like second or third order of the game, I blind the Avatar. His entire attack run just falls apart. And you could really tell that the whole plan was for that Avatar to come kill my whole army. So then he put Bit and Kiss into Cyber Mask to keep them safe, went back and kind of just like stood as far back as he could away from MRO and friends. And that was kind of how it went. Once the Avatar got blinded, he was on the back foot. He revealed his Speculo because he had this whole order pool left and tried to discover shoot my Fidé. He failed his discover roll. So it was just staying there revealed in front of the Fidé, who was still at full impersonation. And so as my turn started and he basically like conceded the field and hadn't taken any of the supply boxes, my Asawira just looked in the room through a window and went, is this guy bothering you? And just blew away just AP Spitfired the absolute Christ out of the Speculo Killer, and then went to town on what few pieces I could see. So killed off between him and the Muyib with the heavy rocket launcher, killed off all the orders I could see. So just hunted down the Taigas that were kind of hiding in corners, cleared all the, you know, the sort of like dangerous warbands that were advancing my position, and then killed off as many light orders as I could, because the plan was basically he's going to start his next turn with as few orders for the Avatar as possible. Like, I can't get him below four, right? But he's always gonna have four orders, but I'll kill as many of these things as I can. And then my goal was just to like late game grab some boxes, and that kind of worked. Got a couple more gunfights with the Avatar. The angles were bad for him, so he was just kind of going back and forth. Every time he'd win a fight, I would just fall back out of line of fire, and he would have to like spend more orders coming to find me. And it turned into a real like velociraptors in the kitchen Jurassic Park thing, right? Where I would get in a gunfight with him. I would survive because I got two wounds. I'm an Asawira, fall back, and then just kind of make him spend more orders moving. And so he got nervous that his order pool was getting low, went back to cover. And then because I'd cleared the midfield of all the distractions and mines and markers, McMurrow just said, all right, do I go now? And the order pool said yes. And so McMurrow smoked his way over to the Avatar and kicked him in the dick while the Dr. Shotgun went and grabbed all three boxes, passed on to the Muyib, and the rest just went in my bag. And so I ended up winning that one 10-0. And at the end of the game, I had actually tabled him too. So, or no, wait, I didn't table him. I got close. You tabled him in the next game, actually. I was looking at your stats here on OTM. I
play Steel Phalanx next.
Oh, no, yeah, that's right. I did table him. I did kill him to a man. You play Listen, who I played round one. You play his Steel Phalanx army. And that was it. So that was the end of day one. I was undefeated. Dan had gotten two wins and a tie.
Hey, I didn't talk about my third game.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Go on. Sorry.
Sons of bitches. So I played against Amon, he's currently moved away, but also a Calgary local. You know, this is the best thing. Go to Edmonton. Just play people you played before.
You did kind of do that, didn't you, this time
around? I actually played with all the people. I have not played a lot of people. I played at least one game against everyone else that I played in the whole tournament, day one and day two. It was just all repeats, which was funny to me. But anyways, played with Amon. Clearly, he'd been practicing with Owen because he had this crazy Neoterra list where there wasn't a ton of cover, and the Bolt Sniper was looking, and I kind of null deployed because I knew I was just going to get shot off the table super fast. And then he walks up with three, what are they, Locusts? The MIM-6 guys? MIM-6 hackers?
Yeah, three Locusts and a Bulleteer, and then the Bolt Link.
So three Locusts get up into within 16 inches of my my deployment, and they all go on suppression with the Bulleteer.
Oof.
And I'm like,
Now how will I break this?
And he like narrowly edged around my QAZ beast, which is so annoying. It was like, let's measure zone of control. You are 2 millimeters out. Good job.
They were funny, actually. I stuck my QAZ beast in an obnoxious place where he was never able to actually see it, and it covered two of the objectives. They were a big deal, the QAZ beasts, actually, when I played.
Yeah. So luckily, it was in a spot where he set up against me, and he didn't really kill a lot. He severely oppressed the crap out of me, where I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. But he didn't open any boxes. No, he did open one box, but he was like on top of a roof in the middle and basically could not escape from it. And so he was just hoping to hold that position. So I was like, okay. So I stared at the game board and I stared at the game board and I was like, what do I do? What do I do? What do I do? And then finally I was like, you know what? This is what happens. The five-man link with the Quangxi walks over a building and then halfway down the stairs and then stares at one of the Locusts. The Locust dodges. Everything shoots the Quangxi. The Locust fails their dodge. Quangxi double templates him. He blows up. And that opens up the one side little area where my Sujan walks up, cautious moves 8 inches to a safe spot, cautious moves 8 inches. That was right where his QAZ beast was. I spend like another three orders walking all the way around, kill a few back piece models, walk up behind the Bulleteer, kill the Bulleteer, because I had to get close because I was like, I'm not rolling him in -6 and then he's going to turn around on me. And it was just like, and then the Zujan killed some stuff and then ran into a corner. And then he's like, okay. Oh, yeah. Also, my ninja, stupid freaking ninja, was hidden deployed in the middle, and when he tried to go up to open a box, I revealed, and then we hackered off, and then it was a few extra orders, and so that screwed up a little bit, which was really, really nice. But basically, his turn was just trying to kill my Bulleteer and lobbying for position again, and he couldn't kill my Sujan. He dropped an EM mine around a corner. I made my Fizz -3 and I dodged back out of range of the mine.
Oh, man.
And then he came around with a shotgun and I just dodged the heck out of it and made a lot of armor saves. luckily he was at zero range because he was too far away, but it was like that perfect distance of like, whew, that was close. That
and I live suit
has made two EM saves before. Anyways, so then it goes into my turn, and I have to spend way too many orders dropping smoke to, because the locusts are still like on rooftops and around that area, right, just staying in suppression.
Being, so being I have to like six suppressors.
I have to reform that Quang Chi link. The controller drops the smoke. Luckily, the sniper moved over and so it was blocked behind a box. So I had to drop a smoke, stand up, walk into the smoke, crawl out of the smoke, drop another smoke, then stand up and get down the ladder. Luckily, as we know, the crane agent's really good at melee, so he just walked up and slapped a QAZ creature out of existence.
Just slapped him back to his own dimension.
Yeah, he's like, get out of here. And then Amon was surprised. He's like, whoa, you can melee back? I'm like, yeah, it's guard.
It's guard. You can always melee.
That's the rules. Yeah. So he learned something there. and then basically I was able to walk up and take over that rooftop, which had, and open up a box on the way and then go into the rooftop. And then I was able to get, did I kill the sniper right away? Anyways, the Quang Chi did some suicide runs when they're on top and just kind of was able to template a bunch of stuff. Right. And then I made a crap ton of saves I had no business doing. And so my suicide run became a, hey, look, I'm still here. You want to activate and stand up? Because I'm looking everywhere.
I'm alive.
That's funny. Then he did it. And then I went dogged because I made another like four saves that I shouldn't have. And I'm just like killing it. Basically, he just killed himself into me trying to kill a stupid 5-point Quang Chi. Oh, and I would just make stupid saves. And it was a little ridiculous. And then, yeah, it just got to the point where he didn't have a whole lot of models left. And I went and grabbed the last box. And that was that.
Sweet. So you ended up winning that one.
9-1, I think.
You did. And that means that, like I said, you were 2-2. I was 3 wins. And Owen was 2-1 going into day two. As we went back to the hotel, Owen decided he was just going to change his whole army to O12. Yeah. He almost did on the drive up to play O12 instead. We wrote a new army list. It was real close. We but Dan didn't bring his O12. Or he didn't have enough blue coats or something. He wanted 4 blue coats.
No, Dan didn't bring them. If Dan had brought them, it was a not zero chance. I just switched factions the night before. Switched
factions last night. Like a serial killer. Just changing to something else. So why don't you start off day two then, and I'll end and we'll loop. Because you've gone into it like, fuck it. I'm going to... Yeah. I mean, like...
All right. So I play against a guy playing JSA. I played him the last round of Carbonite last year, and he completely slapped my face off. And so I was like, okay, time for revenge.
It's a rematch. So he goes by the name of El Hizzy.
Yeah. I was like, I recognize that name somewhere. I'm like, that's what I recommend. Anyways, he's playing JSA, a very elite JSA, all in one group. He's got like the... basically almost all heavy infantry with a character or whatever and a core, and then he's got the Harris of the two 3-wound total immune guys with an engineer and like a war core. And anyway, so there's this, it was a 3D printed thing with like that little like gazebo looking thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I put a Dakini on top, the Dakini sniper, and I'm like, I get one turn until the biotech whatever comes in and starts murdering me. But it was great because he was able to see a whole lot, and he was able to kill my Garuda, and it was a Sun Tzu list as well, and he killed a few pieces like really fast, which was really annoying. And then he insisted on playing true line of sight, and then I let it slip that my Dakini could see this really nice area through, and then he was like gonna walk up that way. But then he changed his mind and turned around right away. And I was like, ooh. I mean, I guess if I wouldn't have said anything, maybe I would have felt bad. I don't know. Because he was the one who wanted true line of sight. So, and so he wasted a couple orders there. He only killed a few models and then went in the room and like held the room with like a ton of crap. But the problem was we put all four turrets in the room. So this is the scenario where it was panic room, but also both players got to place universally aggressive turrets. So he ended up only killing, he killed up two turrets because they were in the doorways and then dodged into the room. But as he was like dodging or moving into the room, I think I ended up killing like two models plus like Dakini Sniper Overwatch going into the room because of up on top. And so I was feeling really good. Basically, I moved up, I smoked the room, so I was able to get up. I killed some more stuff. I ended up, if I, he had so much in the room that if I tried to go take the room, it wasn't going to be super helpful. And so I just stood outside, gave him the 2 points because I was like, next turn, I'm going to go in the room. It's going to be fine. He really didn't do a whole lot the second turn because if he activated at all, anything around the room, two turrets firing him, his own turrets, which was awesome. And so he didn't do a whole lot, which was fine for me. And then I made the huge mistake of I started walking up. I forgot about the Flammenspear that the one guy had. And with my Dakini link that walked up, and I was like, oh no, I thought he was crouched to I should have clarified. But one Dakini face to face, one and shot him. But how the AoEs work sillyly is that the other guy, two guys got hit, and I made my armor miraculously on my paramedic, but then I failed on the chain of command guy. And so I was like, okay, well, he can't run into the room anymore. So now Sun Tzu's got to wake up. And so, but at this time, I'm smarter. I put down the smoke again, and then I walk up with Sun Tzu, and he makes his dodge, and he dodges 4 inches out. And turns out this is his lieutenant, and he's like standing almost in the doorway. And I'm like, ha, I, he's in smoke. I can, with Whip 17, I can nanopulsar him.
You sure can.
But then I rolled a 20, and he dodged 4 inches out and engaged
Dan
me.
realizes that this was the worst decision he could have made out of any decision in that moment.
100%. Because I
As
got
we
greedy.
talked about it afterwards, and
I
I was
just
like,
get
why on
free
earth would
shots
you do
again.
this?
Why would you? What were you thinking?
Because it was the one time, because all I had to do was walk Sun Tzu up
Into the room.
into the room. And I
And
would have
he's
been able,
done.
I might have been like been in like the edge of the room, but like I would have been more than half in, which counts as a man. And then I get 2 points that turn. He gets 1 point, I get 2 points. But instead, I screwed up and he dodges out. Sun Tzu's engaged. He's like a melee monster. Sun Tzu is not in the slightest. And so Sun Tzu has to stop activating. I have a couple more orders to activate walk up. I should have shot in the combat with Sun Tzu just to try to pepper him up, but he had two wounds and I was like, am I gonna hurt him?
I would also state the guy who he shot this nanoposter at was a Domaru who had multiple wounds, even if he had been successful.
Look, I had nanopulsar plus one burst and I forgot the rules of the game, okay? In my defense, I'm an idiot.
In my defense, I didn't think about what he had. I only thought about what I had.
And I wasn't even sure what I had.
I didn't even look at that closely.
So he spends a bunch of orders on his turn beating up Sun Tzu. I'm making saves. I'm shooting in the combat as AOs. And I also hurt Sun Tzu myself, which was unfortunate. I'm like,
Whoopsie.
oh no. And then the last order, I was like, wait a minute. There's a turret that can see us. It should have been shooting at us the whole time, as per the rules. I guess we'll roll it once because we forgot it the other two, three orders. And then I roll a crit hit like hitting on like sevens.
Ooh.
And the Domaru disappears. So Sun Tzu's dead, but the Domaru's also dead. But I'm like, okay, what can I possibly get in the room? What do I have? And he doesn't have a lot because he can't activate anything in the room because. So he activates what little he has outside the room. And then basically my last, and then clears the room of my guys. And so what I have one Quangxi in the room who's just hanging out. And I have like a couple Dakinis, and I'm in Lost Lieutenant. And so with everything had to kind of go perfectly, the one Dakini comes up the side, wins a face to face, kills a guy laying on the floor in the room. Then he walks into the room because he only had two guys left, actually. And the other guys, there's a character, so I gotta kill them while on the floor. So I walk in. No, I killed one of the turrets because it was it had to kill it to be able to move up and advance. And then I literally walk into the room and get one order, and that's the last order I can get on them because I had like a free order from the Evo and I had a couple of command tokens left. And so this little Dakini paramedic with a combi rifle walks up, wins the face to face, makes his armor save. And I'm like, ugh. And so the Dakini sniper is like just outside the room. Luckily, they walk six. So he just walks up, point blank, shoots the sniper. He dodges, and I miss. Also, both of these tank a turret, and the turret fails against the paramedic entirely. So the paramedic's alive. I'm like, oh, I got points in the room now. And then the sniper tanks two hits and makes both armor saves.
Oh, no.
Which is silly. And so I'm thinking, okay, I don't have a character. I don't have a character point. And so right now he's going to win 5-4. So I have to activate my Quang Chi with my last order and walk up. He dodges, so I pistol him. I get him. He fails his save, and then the turret kills me. And then I realize that you assign lieutenants, and a lieutenant counts towards the character bonus or whatever for the holding the room, right?
It does.
So I forgot that if the Quang Chi did just not activate it, then we would have tied 5-5 instead of tying 4-4, and there would be no dice rolled, and so that stupid risky maneuver, me jumping over the crates and trying to pistol him down, which was not a huge high success rate, didn't have to happen.
Just totally unnecessary.
We both would have ended, because it was so tight in the five, we both would have ended up higher in the rankings at the end of the in the tournament. But it was fun. It was epic. It was crazy. It was my one big mistake was not paying attention to the Flammage Spear. That was easy. All things staying the same. I just have an extra character point that I can go in, extra order. But also following that, Sun Tzu just not walking into the room and taking those 2 points that turn, and then and there's no way he would have won at that point.
Right.
Because to fight Sun Tzu, he would have had to be in the room and looking at all the turrets, and turrets would have been firing at him as well. And so he'd have to waste orders. Anyways, so a couple big mistakes for me, still ended up dragging back into a tie. It was a really fun game.
It sounds like it was a really good game. 4-4. And again, like, I like it when you can play the game tape and go like, oh no, this is what would have changed things. You know what I mean?
For sure.
Well, my round two, or my round four, sorry, I played Mjolnir right after Owen did. And we played Panic Room. And I had a much like grindier game than you did, but it was still a very uphill battle because I lost the initiative roll. So I had to go first. Panic Room is scored at the end of the round. So that's just like an outright disadvantage. And then from the get-go, we completely fucked up the mission. Yes. I won deployment. There was a good and bad side, obviously, because he got to take turn order and immediately chose second. He won the initiative roll. I just failed my check. So I put him on the bad side, or the side that was more open and exposed. We run a brutal cities table, which was beautiful to look at, but unfortunately only had like these five enormous, super tall, like 18 inch tall buildings. And our panic room had rooms inside of it. Like there was a big central room you could go into that was like the elevator shaft that meant that you could like hide in a room inside the panic room and you couldn't see side to side on it, which was a lot. So he deployed first, deployed all of his cam markers, basically touching the room up to his half. I forgot completely that there was confused deployment in the mission. I just remembered the 8-inch deployment zones and just deployed the same. So we had like all of our cam markers in the middle of the table. I whip checked my my Fide on top of the building his Cataran was sitting on. And the game started from there. So he went second, which means I had the first strike. My Fide Discover shot his Cataran off the roof and immediately killed it. And then my Aspire Spitfire, he placed two turrets basically looking at my deployment zone and in the doorway leading into the room. And my Aspire Spitfire was like, don't worry, I'll handle this. And immediately got crit off the table. No. In this first move, just got shot to shit by these turrets. Didn't die, so my doctor was like, oh, don't worry, I've got this, and revived him. But I ended up wasting four orders in my deployment zone killing these turrets to just be able to move. In hindsight, what I should have done is just run up to the one in the doorway with McMurro and my impetuous order and just obliterated it with templates, but I didn't. And so I faffed around for a bit, and by the time the turn was over, I hadn't killed very much. Nauf was basically safe in his room. He'd advanced a little bit. I put down like a repeater net around the room, which was very important in locking down this is my day two list. So this had a four-man core with like a Ghulam hacker, a Ghulam NCO, a Ghulam lieutenant plus one order and plus one command token, and then a Brid hacker. So between the sixth sense, the being in a building or touching one of the like your live pylons that are in panic room, having lit up the repeater net, like there was almost nowhere Oahu could go where if she didn't like, she was with the minus six Tinbot Riot Girl, and she still didn't want to have anything to do with that fire team's hackers. They were just going to obliterate her. She's going to get Trinity'd and either isolated or carbonated at the same time. And it was bad news once that hacking net was out. So that was the best I could do to slow him down. And then his active turn two started, and Nauf ran out the Armadino, threw a smoke grenade. My Daylami was like 14s, and he rolled a 2, and I rolled a 17. And I think that would have changed the entire course of the game if I just landed that one. My TSN turning point, if I just landed that one, whatchamacallit, that one Panzerfaust, and blowed up that Armadino, which was his only source of smoke, that would have completely changed the game, because then Nauf just smoked his way across the board, killing whatever he wanted to, because I was kind of in the wind, half in and half out of the building, because I had to go first. And that led to me losing my Spitfire. I lost McMurrow. I lost my Flashbot, which I kind of deployed stupidly and then got stuck when I ran out of orders. And he just kind of at will killed a whole bunch of stuff. I managed to kill his Digger with the Digger walked out of smoke kind of accidentally, thinking he was safe. And okay, hang on, guys, 1 second.
Well, I'm going to talk about my game then.
Look. He ended up losing. He's just a bit emotional right now. He's got to go. Just cry in the corner. He'll be back, guys. Don't worry.
It's all coming back to him now. He's remembering all the feelings he had at the moment. The thing they screwed up about the scenario is they forgot that Panic Room had a confused deployment. And so Ash got to put out his Fidays and his Sunduck Butt and his Daylamis all for free. And his opponent got to airdrop and forward deploy all of his camel markers for free. And I'm of the opinion that it's a pretty substantial change to how both of them play if they're not allowed to do that, because like it's not like one player only had the infiltrating guys. Like if it was like, oh, only one of them had forward deploy stuff, then that guy probably lost. But because they both did, I think it's just they have to play a completely different game.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry. What were you just saying?
I was talking about how the rule that you guys had forgotten was the confused deployment of Panic Room. And yeah, the fact that both of you had for deploying stuff, whether through Fidays or camo irregulars and stuff like that.
Well, it becomes even more important at the end.
Yeah. And I was just going to say that, and I had just said, normally like if one person had skewed towards camo and forgot about it, like, oh, that guy probably loses without it. But because both of you had pretty key pieces that had that skill, I don't think it's very obvious that one wins or the other. Like, the whole game's a wash because you'd have to do it again. But yeah.
Well, the last move of the game was the important one. The only things he had camo infiltrating were a a hard case.
It actually doesn't matter, because anything that he had that infiltrated didn't have to spend orders to get out of the kill zone at the beginning of the game because they could infiltrate.
Yeah.
And so like any orders that they did, period, is already completely changing the state of where you're setting up, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And then anyway, talk about the finale.
So we fall back and forth. My Aspire boarding shotgun gets in the room. Nauf gets in the room turn one and holds it, denying me points. He scores 2. Then my boarding shotgun guy comes in and kills the entire fire team by himself with a Daylami, and is like hiding in the room inside the room going into turn two. And turn two, he comes back in with the Riot Girls, and Uahu braves the room. Uahu gets eventually like blown up by the Barid and friends, and a combination of that and the dodging Asawira. The little Daylami goes down, unfortunately, as a Sunduckbutt who like dodges his way into the room to just be in there for the 50 something points and be able to spray bullets every direction. And then at the end of turn three, we've just ground ourselves into dust. His entire core team's dead. I've killed the entire Harris team of Oahu and the two Riot Girls with just this doctor. He's in the room by himself he goes and tries to bring back the Daylami and 20s her. He accidentally steps on her neck while he tries to fix her, because that would have given me someone else to cover the door. And as I'm standing next to it, he drops in Raoul Spectre. I completely forget my control jump to put a -3 on, and he would also add a -3 from the confused deployment, but he rolls a 5, so it wouldn't really matter. He showed up, and the important thing is that he shows up right in the doorway of the room, and I dodge to get into combat with him to keep him out of the room and fail my dodge. He then walks in, shotguns me to death with MIM-6, and takes the room. Revives Nauf, who I thought I'd templated, but I must not have. to like make sure he was finished off, but I must have forgotten to get like another extra points in there. But Nauf was also dead and got brought back by the doctor. So this is his last order. Piles as many people in the room as he can. Tries to like score those points and ends up winning 10-2. Because I did for a couple rounds. I got my classified with Predator because the Asawir was covered head to toe in Riot Girl blood and Oahu pieces at the end of the game. And also he was in the room for one of the rounds. So regardless of if I had points or not, he was still a headquarters unit. So I got that point. And that was it. But points wise, it was actually relatively tight. He bringing Nauf back, he was under 100 at the end of the game, but revived two with the Dactaris after my last piece in the room went down. I think he was at like 90 something before that happened. So it was like 90 something, 61. And he went to 136 at the end.
Down to the wire.
And that was it. Yeah, it was tight. Even with all the screw ups and fuck ups we did, it was a super tight, grindy game. I honestly think I just lost on the initiative roll more than anything else because he had last move every time, right? I'm much more.
my assassins are. Yeah.
Well, the assassins are much more capable of taking that room back than Starco is. Like the Riot Girls can do okay and they can dodge like crazy and survive in there, but the Asawira, McMurrow, and Sonic Butt will pulverize whatever is in that room if they feel like it. And unfortunately, I did not have the chance to do those moves. So that
did
was
you get a Sonic Buck in the room?
He was in the room eventually. Yeah, he held the room almost by himself for two turns. He got taken down by the boarding shotgun. So I was in the room inside the room with the doctor, and Sonic Butt was kind of watching the door that they had to come through without being obliterated by hacking. And the shotgun came in and just barely killed him. But then I dodged out of the room because I can dodge 4 inches with the Asawira. So he got obliterated and took all the shots, but the Asawira was then in combat with her at the end of that order because he just like was like, excuse me, this is my room. And then no one wanted to come. No one wanted anything to do with that afterwards. That far team had to immediately scatter to the wind. Because between the Daylami with the light shotgun that was also in that room and activating the Asawira to just, you know, crumple to pieces the Riot Girl, they had to start doing things by themselves. And then Oahu came in the room and was fighting two hackers and a bit of fire team at the same time. That was a good game though. Super nice. It was really cool. We had a good chat afterwards. And like, it was lots of laughs. It was just, it's such a rough mission and incorporating all those turrets and stuff. I was just down so many orders and having to like go first and take the room was not my army's preference. So what about you, Owen? You had honor to reclaim. How was your fourth game?
Well, day two is when we go brainless and we bring out the nine model
double tag list,
nine order, two tags and a Swiss Guard list that was tailor made.
You came choosing violence to that day for sure.
So day two, I actually played the person you played first round with my loss and his wins. I think it's Listen is his handle.
Yeah, Listen's his handle. Yeah, Steel Phalanx.
Yeah. He's playing Steel Phalanx. He's got his squad of Hippolyta, Eudoros, Machaon, a Myrmidon. And then it's basically every model I expected when we were talking about Steel Phalanx into this mission. Because they just have every tool they need to do this. Downside for him though, table was just not good. Like, I won't try and make any kind of like case it looked nice, but he had nowhere to deploy. I won the role and I chose deployment and was like, go ahead, you can go first or second, I don't care, because that side of the board has one piece of terrain in its deployment zone. There's only one. There was a box that was vertical so you couldn't get behind it from the opponent's side, and there was one building within 8 inches of his board edge.
Luckily there's nothing, a panic room in the middle to kind of hide behind too, but it's not ideal for sure.
Yeah, so he had to go first, because if he didn't go first, he was going to die, because none of his models could hide at all. And so he has to go first, which means he has to move into the turrets and move into the panic room. He, of course, Phoenix and his Link just clear the turrets, no problem. Eudoros and friends, they put some smoke up, because my list facing him is like a Yotam and a grand total of like 35 points outside of a Yotam. So he knows there's some random garbage coming at him. Finally, he moves in the room and he leaves Hippolyta behind out of his Link to stay in the room, which we talked about it afterwards, and that I think this was the mistake, is Hippolyta can't do it by herself. If the Link had stayed, she's not impetuous, so she can actually get cover with the little box in the middle of it. And they all get the Link bonuses like Sixth Sense and Extra Burst and blah, blah, blah. Or they just all suppress. But the moral of the story is, it's not just her by herself trying to do it. So she stays. My first turn, my two diggers walk up and beat Hippolyta to death in melee. Because no matter how good you are not better than natural born warrior. So burst that's how that happened.
First three melee.
Burst three. One of them was flash pulsed, so he was not the lead of this coordinate. But he joined the fight just to, massage his friend's shoulders and say, kill her.
That's right. Yeah. Just to be like, pocket sand.
Swiss Guard, of course, walks up into the zone. There was a brief moment where he revealed his hidden
a gamma
missile launcher, which I did not expect, and he got a free shot into, well, not a free because I got to arrow, but he shoots into the middle of all of the diggers and the Swiss Guard, who are all packed together, and all of them just dodge out of the way. Like the digger who gets shot crit dodges and the other two dodge. I think the Swiss Guard loses, but he just makes all of his armor saves, and I'm like, oh, that was terrifying.
That's super lucky.
And so, yeah, the two diggers beat him to death. The Swiss Guard goes invisible again. And then the cutter reveals itself and just annihilates the Agemma and then goes back into camo sitting outside the room. And so at that point, he has to enter the room with a Swiss Guard who's in a marker state and is a headquarters troop and two diggers. And he moves up with Phoenix and he's smoking consistently because there's a suppressing Yotam and a cutter. And he knows it's a cutter just standing there looking at him. He doesn't want to fight it. He needs to get to the room. So he smokes and he moves up and he smokes and he moves up. And then he's closing in on the room. And then the digger dodges out of the room and engages Phoenix and then kills Phoenix in ARO with Phoenix and a Myrmidon teaming up against him.
Oh, that's funny.
And then
you're a monster.
So once again, your 14 point like miners basically did better than a bunch of steel flanks guys. That's very funny. Yep. It looks like you really effectively like scalped out any of the pieces that could threaten the tags and or take the room, and then that was it. Because the scores aren't that different. You didn't lose barely anything. You had 272 left, but he had 193. He still had a significant chunk of his army left. It just wasn't anything that could really.
In all fairness, we actually stopped playing after that point. I don't have anything that can viably get even into the room. Never mind. Right. Try and reveal and fight the Swiss Guard, who's like the final boss at the end of it. Like
his tiny shotgun. Just be like, I brought this tiny shotgun for close encounters.
Standing in the shadow of the Yotam, who's standing in the doorway, looking past him, suppressing. And then to the other door where there's the cutter, who's also going to be suppressing. And it's like, go ahead, Eudoros. You're pretty good, but you're not that good. And that was on top of the diggers just beating everyone to death. So yeah, he played one turn of that, and that was the game.
1-9 for you.
Yep. This is also in my day two. I had accepted fully that there was a bunch of points that I could not score. My thinking was that I'd go undefeated on day one, and then all I needed to do was win my games on day two, rather than try and maximize score. That was the idea, obviously. Didn't work, but then I play you.
Okay, well, let's do Dan first, then we'll talk about our final mission against each other.
Yep.
This is my last game of the tournament.
Yeah, this is last launch, which is a rough mission in the tournament, let me tell you.
I was okay with it.
I know you were, because you brought a gimmick.
So I brung Sun Tzu again. I start, he strips the order pool from my Evo bot, but luckily how it was placed and how he deployed, I was able to be like right at the line and just get up and walk. I had to lay down some smoke, but then I was able to just walk up with two orders that I had left, because I only had four orders in that group, because the other one was a Garuda hiding out. And then I bought another 12 order and he was able to get out. The thing was, with the room, there was barely enough space for a 50 mil or whatever, 55 mil to even exist, because it was like mini walls and rooms and doors all throughout it. And with the console in the middle, it basically blocked line of sight. I thought there was lines that you could see through it, which would have changed a lot of things. But it really made the room like impossible to see through, except for like on tiny, tiny little angles. So it was just a real mess. So I get my Evo out and then kind of just advance up the board a little bit. I go hang out in the room with a bunch of Quang Chi, and one jumps out and double templates his bolt sniper. Oh, sorry. He was playing, what was he playing?
One of the NA2 armies, one with Hannibal.
Oh, he's playing Foreign Company.
Foreign Company. There it is. He had an orc Spitfire that was way out of range of my Dakini sniper, but unfortunately the Dakini was in a Harris and I didn't have room to move things around. I guess I could have moved the, because I only have nine in the one group, I could have moved my evil hacker into the main group and run out and then had three orders with the Dakini sniper to shoot the orc off the roof, or at least get him down, maybe take a wound off him before he jumps down in the cover. Because that orc proved very, very annoying and difficult in the end. Basically, his turn, I kind of, yeah, that's the last of my turn. The bolt sniper survives. He makes his dodge, little bugger, and breaks out a link, and then the Quang Chi blows up. His turn, he walks out with that orc with like the, anyways, he walks up, throws a pitcher and immobilizes and isolates my Sujan. So that's an order down, and he's like a brick. He's got a reset on or one or two, which he tried a few times and was not able to go. So that really sucked. But then he went up with the, what was those little bots and total immune little melee creatures that are 1 point each.
Total mean melee creatures and foreign
Uber
company.
commando, Uber Vol commandos.
Uber Vol commandos. Yes.
Yeah, so he comes in with that and tries to like blow up the room, and I just keep on like, he throws smoke, but I like dodge out of the smoke, and then like, and I arrange myself so a Quang Chi, if he tries to walk into combat with me, I can template the controller, and so he doesn't want to do that, so we kind of stalemate in the middle, which is nice, and I'm able to walk up and kill the controller, which was really good. But then he was able to dodge before I killed the controller. He dodged into like a doorway, so it was just like impossible for me to walk through without spending orders to kill him. I'm ahead in points, but I really haven't killed anything. And so I lay down some more smoke. I kind of move up, kill a few more things. This orc will not die. I bring in my Garuda. He fails his combat jump roll because I can't boost it because my evil hacker is gone. But I start off on the other side of the board. I walk up. This orc is down to one wound, but has made like seven other saves. And he's armor four. I get it, but it's just like he just will not die. He doesn't do a whole lot to me as well, so it goes in the last turn, and my last turn is basically me walking up trying to get, oh no, I was able to suppress on my second turn with Sun Tzu, but Sun Tzu also took a crit from the orc and failed both his saves, so he's just like hanging out on like nothing. I still have my chain of command, so I'm not worried about loss of lieutenant, but it's just kind of like ideally Sun Tzu wants to get out. When he gets hit by Sun Tzu, he dodges out of line of fire. And then I just want to clarify the line of sight that he wants. Like this is like in a bit. And then he goes, oh well, and he moves it up. And so he can see everything again. And I'm like, I shouldn't have said anything. Because basically I had to spend a few orders laying on smoke because of the weird, stupid angle of the thing. My controller was still there, but not able to be in a Harris, so it was single shots. And because of where he was and the Uberfall Commando Dudders that just weren't dead, I could barely walk up, but then I'd get line of, I couldn't see through, but I was able to be seen by the bolt link. And so I had to lay down, well, not the sniper, but the other people. So I had to lay down smoke and then run over and then lay down smoke again. And then I had to run over with a specialist,
So
get the
order
box
intensive.
open, and then Sun Tzu can grab it and run back in. And everything almost went according to plan. I
It had to
failed
all go right for it to
one.
work though, didn't
I
it?
failed one too
Ah, it
many
sucks.
orders, and Sun Tzu was basically there being, oh, if I walk, which is annoying because I realized it too late because I spent, once I failed opening the box the first time, I went back and opened the box, but then I calculated my orders of Sun Tzu can spend one order, go grab it. Another order, walk over, and then another order, get out. And I just had two orders left, not three. And so I was like, I wasted an order opening the box. And so I kind of set up in the room, I suppressed, but basically I was like, okay, it's over. And then he basically had it in his in the bag. He spent way too many orders and way too many face to face, giving my hopes up. And I was like, well, if I crit him or something, I can win this game. And then the dice did not go my way. I lost the game. It was a bit of a disappointing loss because I just felt like I didn't feel
It's your
like
game to
the best.
lose.
If we weren't, I don't think either of us were playing very well or optimally. We were kind of just flailing about, and he happened to win is how I felt.
It got messy. Yeah, it got messy at the end.
But it was just kind of like so many things went wrong where that just if that orc was dead, then I have three more orders to deal with and not dropping smoke. And then I guarantee win that game kind of thing. And it's like, I don't want to blame the dice, but it's like, I should have advanced up a little bit more with my other guy, laid down some mad traps. Like it was just kind of like, it was a long, long tournament. And I for sure wasn't playing optimally. It was a game and that was that. So it was a disappointing finish for the second year in a row.
I mean, you did great. You came 12th out of like 38. That's a great finish.
Only 14th last time.
Yeah, exactly. You're up in the standings, which is fantastic. Well, at the end of my flights, 2,000 miles to go play Infinity for five games, I end up playing Owen in round five. And we end up playing the game that he has been preparing a list for for the last 2 months and was the only game that you and I didn't get to play when you came down here to Ontario and we did our practice game. So it was very fitting that not only did we play the fifth round, we finished our little 2-2 round robin five game series that we did on GMG with playing Panic Room. Playing Last Launch. And you took your double tag Nightmare, which I just want to point out for the people listening, had no specialists in it. So right away, he had earned a point during list creation and I was down 2 points because even if I kill his tags, like he has to let his pilots out and then let me kill them for me to get a single specialist kill.
That's correct.
It was a nightmare because it was literally like the only thing that Owen didn't enjoy about this game is he didn't get to unleash it on someone that didn't know. He didn't get the schadenfreude of someone else's misery, not knowing what was going on and why he couldn't score any points.
It kind of worked because you didn't realize till like the end of your second turn when you're like, wait a second, I can't kill any specialists.
That's right.
Yeah, like, exactly. yeah, you can't.
Yeah, no, you
that
no,
was
you,
the idea.
You literally can't. It was a great game in so much as we were very close point-wise, but like I didn't have much of a chance. You had size 7 tags. We were on a table where there was multiple.
In all fairness, I don't think there was a table on that in that event that wouldn't have had the same kind of issues.
The one I played Mjolnir on definitely would have been better because there was nothing that was less than 18 inches tall. You can hurdle shit on that table.
I guess, but I don't know if that's actually good for you.
Well, the difference would have been that any of the buildings I could go inside had rooftops. You know what I mean? Like it wouldn't be me sitting on flat tops of buildings and me sitting inside buildings. There's plenty of places I could hide with a lot of like removable rooftops and stuff like that. In this case, though, I was just sitting on top of flat buildings and you were able to hurdle up your size 7 body onto little skinny tiny walls and then run along them like your Jubei Kiwagami and Ninja Scroll to shoot me off.
He spends his whole first turn setting up this like intricate hacking net to stop me from leaving. And then I just like, jump up, shoot the hacker.
Shoot the hacker off the roof. You're like, problem solved.
There
my killer
go.
Hacker's like, go get him. And then there's no one to go get him. Because my ghouly hacker's just dead.
You're like, I still have my killer hacker. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah. Once McMurrow was dead, also on a rooftop and you were
same turn.
Freeing. I know. And then freeing clear. Yeah, Yotam walked up to a roof, got out, grabbed a wrist bracelet, and left. And the game was moot at that point. I had no way of having anything. Oh, and you also went in the room with the Swiss Guard to dominate it. I had no way of getting 100 points off the board. So you'd effectively locked out any possibility of me winning by turn two. And we played it out because I'm not going to not play it out. But it was generally a bit of a shit show in that I could not score any points. I managed to get two overall. Just for my classifieds.
He does kill the cutter too in like active turn. Like it's not like points didn't get traded back and forth. Like it was more of a game than my third game.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it was you were definitely screwed for points. There wasn't going to be a way that you could effectively score.
Yeah, and you got first turn, so there was nothing like literally both of the missions on day two were. The dice roll for initiative choice was really, really important. I lost both of them and I lost both those games.
I don't think I actually needed first turn as much as you did because of the ability for me to just annihilate your evil bot if he tries to make his run. Because you don't know, like, you know, I have two hidden things. You know exactly what's in my list, but you don't know where I put them. And so, like, if McMurder tries to do his shtick, you don't know where the I'm going to stop your evil bot is going to come from.
Mm-hmm.
And I know enough to reduce whatever order pool ID bot is in And then the other side of the coin, and the one that the whole list was built around, I don't actually care if you get the evil bot out.
No, because it's one of the tag leaves. Like, it was moot if the evil bot got out. I wouldn't have, if I'd gotten to go first, I would have killed one of your tags. That's what
I would have done. You would have gone right in for the cutter, or the Yotam, rather. The Yotam. Because the cutter wouldn't be there. Yeah.
Because if I can kill the Yotam, then I have a chance.
And that's what the diggers are for. They just hang out around. Yeah. They're like, oh, I also he's coming. Like, dodge, 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 dodge.
I had a couple like just bad dice moments too. Like my Fidei standing next to the cutter at deployment to try and keep you from rampaging, because you deployed him knowing you were going first because you wanted the order and the tackle aware, because you don't generate them if you're not on the table. Yep. And my Fidei was like, had two chances to dodge into combat with you. And I knew I was going to die because you had the digger right next to him to just pile in and kill me afterwards. But it meant that you had to spend orders you didn't want to spend, right? So you're very order starved. I was doing everything I could to try and speed bump you from having like the ultimate first turn. And I failed two dodge rolls. And then you were just like, oh, hello. And the digger just went over and hugged me. And I died.
I will say, on another note, my entire tournament event, whatever, with the exception of the third game where nothing worked, I think diggers won me every single game.
They sure
either
did.
Either by their existence or just their ability to just win. Like,
they're tremendous.
They're so wildly off the curve.
Yeah. Owen's been bragging about them for like over a year now. I'm like, these guys are unhinged and crazy. And everyone's like, but no one plays them. It's not too bad. And then he brings them to the table. And he's like, you see?
Game after game after game after game. Like, in my
they provide the melee warband that Pano doesn't have. You know what I mean? Like, especially the way you're using them, you're using them to fill like role gaps. In factions that you play that don't have access to these kinds of troops. And not only are they good, they're wildly efficient and aggressively pointed. You know what I mean? 14 points for what they do is bananas. And then sometimes, like in our game, they become M-6.
Yeah, or they get HMGs, or they get a motorcycle, or whatever. Like,
rollerblades.
The first thing that happened on my game on round one was one of the diggers got 8-4. And he was facing the enemy HVT. And so I'm like, okay, he impetuous is forward. And then I spend one order on him and he stamps his feet looking at the HVT. Cool. There's a scenario point.
There's a point.
And I did it for 14 points and literally one order. And there was no counterplay because you're not going to reveal yourself to shoot a digger. He's only 14 points. Like,
well, there's nothing for his army to fight either. You're going to look at the HVT.
Like, well, his sniper could have shot me, and like he was aware of that, but he chose not to because it would have revealed his sniper and blah blah blah. And then that digger goes on to beat Kyle to death. Like, it's just ridiculous. And he baits a guy who's in suppression. And like the second game, it's the same thing where a digger kills Pywell and gets the whole tag run messed up. And then in the third game, that one's a wash. But right back to fourth game, they beat Hippolyta to death. And then they start shooting chain rifles in every direction. And then in your game, your Fidei is basically neutered because there's a dude standing right nearby who can just beat the Fidei in melee. He's half his cost, but that doesn't seem to matter. It's crazy. It's crazy to me. Crazy to me.
They're very good.
Yeah, they're very good.
No doubt. So overall, at the end of the day, none of us came first. You came third, I believe.
Yeah. The second place guy had a tie early. Yeah. I think that was the one with Dan. And that pushed him a little bit ahead. Never played him. That was disappointing this time. But I was like, I don't mind coming behind people, but I want to play them and lose.
That's fair.
It'd be like that.
And then Dan and I came 11th and 12th out of a grand total of 37 players. So top third, which felt really good. I didn't win any games on game two, but I know exactly why I lost both of them. So I'm not super concerned about it. And I had 5 great games against awesome people from Edmonton. So it was a lot of fun.
What's really funny was last tournament, I won 2 decisively. I tied 2 and I lost decisively in the last round. And I didn't lose as decisively in the last round, but otherwise it was very similar.
It was very similar. And at least one of us podiumed, and Owen and I got to complete our series of 5 games, which was great. So that leads us to the future and talking about the future. I think all of us are very infinitied out after the last couple months prepping for the games and playing the tournament. So I think we're going to take a break. We're going to put the Patreon on hiatus and probably be back to you for a review occasionally going into the end of the year. I think we'll definitely cover the new sectorial for O12. I'm sure Dan's going to be excited about that, as well as Warcrow, when and if Warcrow launches, and whatever they've got sort of like for reveals and stuff at Gen Con this year. But I think...
You, thank you so much to everyone who has donated stuff through Patreon. Just like that little extra cash to help us justify it, keep it going.
And get us to hang out like once a week. It's just been great hanging out with you guys every week for the last, Jesus, it's been like a year and a half. It's a long time. And all the episodes and then all the great feedback and the and also our Discord community, which has been like tons of fun. We're not going anywhere. Like, we're still going to be hanging out and I'm sure our group chat will stay the same and we're still going to do occasional episodes, but we're not going to do weekly episodes for the next little while because it's just been a lot keeping up with content and prepping for this tournament. And we want to take a break because that'll make us more excited when we do come back. So expect to see episodes coming out when there's big news from CB. We'll probably jump on a call and chat and make up an episode about it, but we're not going to be so rigorous. And that means we're going to just pause the Patreon so that nobody has to pay for us to do things when we feel like it, as opposed to doing it on a schedule. Anything to add on?
No. Why?
Well, what are you going to do with all our time off?
What game are you going to play?
Infinity. I don't know. All the other miniature games are kind of shit right now. So kind of stuck where it's like, oh, what do you want to go play? Oh, well, there's a community for Warhammer and Warhammer.
We'll
and
still be playing Infinity.
Warhammer.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I want to go play. I'm going to play U.S. Ariadne a whole bunch.
Do it. That's what you got for your prizes.
I doubled my U.S. Ariadne collection, and now I can do more Ariadne.
Make them great again.
Ariadne.
I don't think we can make them great, but we're going to do something.
We're going to make them different.
We're going to find
out great again.
How far can you go with all grunts?
I'm going to paint my Freak Brigade of Bakunin, I think, just to get them finished off. And that'll be my late season ITS army. And we'll probably be back full swing when the new ITS drops around then, I would imagine, till like August.
I am going to be starting Invincible Army, like I said I would. But depending on the Adepticon release of the new O12.
Yeah, new O12. I'm sure we'll all be doing the new O12 at some point because Owen also wants to do O12.
My prize was another box of the Sarco and Seku Droid. So now I have two of each, so I don't have to pretend when both Sarcos are revealed in O12 and Star Armada.
That's true. But my prize was an authorized bounty hunter I immediately gave to Owen so he'd stop proxying them.
Now I have more motorcycles
to proxy as whatever you feel like.
Because whatever with motorcycles. Yeah, I actually have, even after having gotten rid of my old motorcycles, there are a ton of motorcycles around here.
I bet. That tracks. Yeah.
Half of them don't even exist anymore.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's no Kassenbeg.
Yeah, I need to pick up some motorcycles. Gone.
I need to go get the twins. That's the thing I need to get so I can play Vanilla Hack at some point.
Vanilla Hack's pretty cool.
That's pretty cool.
You can bring diggers in Vanilla Hack. Did you know that?
I've already got a digger painted. I'm painting it now.
Yeah. That's right. They're pretty good. I recommend it.
All right. Well, so long and thanks for the fish, everybody. Night.
Bye.